So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early. Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
I actually don't have much bullshit chit-chat to say today.
Me either, other than I managed not to completely fuck up the show flying solo. Last time.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time since you've done that.
I even remembered the intro.
Yeah. I mean, fly solo, not fuck up the show. That you do every week.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know. I mean, let's be clear on that.
No, it was a good show. You know, having the pastrami I forgot the word he used, and I even put it in the title of the show last week because it just tickled me.
I can't remember either.
I mean, I guess I could go look it up and see what it's.
Yeah,
says.
Right. I mean, let's see. I know it's right. It's hold on. I have it right here. So
we
pastrami evangelist.
The pastrami evangelist. I didn't know Mark Boutros had that on his resume. That's impressive.
That is, you know.
Yeah. But that was a very good show. It was really interesting. You know. It gave us all a kind of a behind the scenes peek of what it takes to do whatever it is the fuck you guys do.
Yeah. which still haven't quite figured it out yet.
I mean, I listened, but I didn't exactly pay attention.
Fair enough.
You know, just enough to edit it and get it out. No, seriously, it was a good show. And I'm sorry I missed that one because I really would have been fun to do. But as you said, we will have him back.
Yeah, you know, and he is definitely an interesting guy. Like, we didn't really go, like, too much off track as far as, like, entertainment and pop culture. But Mark is a history major. You know, he was a history major in college and just knows a fuck ton about history and religion and politics and everything. And we have, like, really interesting conversations about that stuff. You know, beyond the usual bluster that most people have, like on social media, like we actually talk about it like in a real way, you know. And what's nuts, he's a Catholic and I'm an atheist. And because we're an adult, we're adults. It never seems to get in the way, you know. It's so crazy.
I always like George Carlin's line, who said, you know, I was an atheist. I was a Catholic. Until I reach the age of reason.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely falling Carlin's camp on that one.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Me too.
You know, I mean, I was raised Catholic, but the priest never touched me, no matter what I tried to do.
Oh, my God. Send your hate mail to Scott Colbert, care of the Imaginarium.
I'm just trying to make sure I get a good seat in hell.
Look, dude, I'll save a seat at the table for you because I'm in the front row, so we're all good there.
Yeah. All right. So I am going full time at work. I guess this is something I can bullshit about for a minute. I start full time next week because my check was short a couple of paychecks ago. And I couldn't understand what was going on with it. And make a long story short, it turns out that my wages are being garnished for a Target credit card that I had back in 2008, 2009. And I had lost my job at the beginning of 2009 because of that wonderful recession we had back then. And so I just, you know, I did what every American does when they lose their job and have a credit card debt. I didn't pay it.
Right. You know, I mean, what else are you going to do?
You know, that was 16 years ago. You know, and of course, you know, there was a statute of limitations of, I think, like 7 years in Arizona, at least. But they get around that every time a new collection agency gets it, that 7 years starts again.
Huh.
And so this debt, you know, this garnishment isn't even, none of it is going to Target at all. They wrote that off, you know, over a decade ago. You know, it's this fucking, you know, collection agency that's going to get all of it. And that's what pisses me off about it the most, is they're getting it and not the actual people who I owe the debt to.
Right.
You know, and I can't fight it, because if I could fight it, then I could afford to pay off the debt.
Right.
You know. So anyway, it screwed me a lot financially. So I had no choice other than to go full-time, which is, I was wanting to do that anyway. So I went and talked to the human resources person last Monday, a week ago this past Monday. And by Friday, I was, you know, put on full-time. And then Monday, I got my new schedule, which starts next week, which is 11:30 to 8 Monday through Friday, which I like, because it still gives me enough time in the morning to wake up. And if I need a doctor's appointment, I can do an early one.
Right, right. Yeah, no, those are not bad hours, dude.
Yeah, and
you know, full time.
Yeah, so I can't complain about it. It just makes it difficult to record the podcast on my end anyway, because I'll have to get up earlier to record it, which means I'll make even less sense than what I do now.
Which is terrifying.
Which is absolutely terrifying. Right. So, but anyway, that's kind of been my week.
All right. Well, I got nothing really. Like my real life job has been keeping me stupid busy.
I mean, I could talk about, you know, what's going on with my sister and my nieces and nephews, but I mean, it's just, you know, real southern white trash goings on, and it's really not worth talking about. It's just so fucking stupid.
Nice.
You know, my nephews are, one's in his 40s, one's in his 30s, and my niece is close to 30. And they're all acting like 10-year-olds, you know, and so it's just a mess. And it makes me glad I don't talk to my sister more often than what I do. You know, it's just yeah, one of those things.
I hear you. Yeah, family's great, isn't it?
You know, so you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family.
You can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose.
Who says?
George Carlin, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he's wrong on that score.
Oh, Jesus, don't, dude.
There's a story you don't want to hear, though.
It just got so goddamn dark out. Like, the weather here this spring has been the typical Northeast, like, insanity. One day it was almost 80. Then it was 50. Yesterday was bright and sunny. Today it's like dark and miserable.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, but that's April.
Yeah, it's been unseasonably windy and rainy here. Not this week. It's been in the high 80s, very low 90s this week. So, which is actually kind of nice.
Well, it's positively balmy for for Phoenix.
Sweater weather.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. What am I doing? There was something I wanted to say, and now it's gone. Just gone. There's only so much room left in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was there, and now it's not.
Yep.
Fuck.
Well, If we're lucky, you'll remember it by the end of the show.
But probably not. So, anyway.
All right, so we have
by now half of our listeners, meaning two people, have punched out already. Like, what are these fucking guys? What are these fucking guys even talking about? You know, nothing.
Yeah, I say that every week. So.
Exactly. So,
but we do have one notable death to talk about this week. Although yes. I would certainly not call this one a tragedy. And that's O.J. Simpson passed away at 76.
Yeah, and you know what? When I heard that news, I don't want to say like it was a surprise, but in the sense that O.J. Simpson is someone I had just not thought about like in ages.
Yeah.
I had no idea if he was still in jail, out of jail. Not, I had no idea what was even up with OJ. And then I was like, oh shit, he fucking died.
Yeah, it was a surprise because I didn't have him on my celebrity death bingo card.
Me either.
But yeah, it was a surprise. But what wasn't a surprise, I suppose, was the reaction to his death.
Not at all, man.
It gave late night TV and social media people something to talk about for at least a day. And all the jokes that you could think about were repeated ad infinitum.
Yeah.
And to the point like, okay, you know, you wrote this 12 hours after his death. This same joke has been said 3,000 times already. Did you really need to add your spin on it, which wasn't even funny, you know?
Well, the answer is yes.
Oh, of course.
You know, so like I said, I hadn't thought about him in years. And then it all immediately came back, like remembering like when it happened, the Bronco chase, yep, the trial, you know, and everything. And man, what a moment in American history and pop culture, right?
Absolutely.
I remember being at work the day that the verdict was going to come down. And this was long before like the internet was really big like it is now. There was no social media. We were huddled around like a small TV in the break room at the office to see the result of the trial. And the verdict came down and I immediately thought, well, this is not going to be good, you know, like the reaction to it. But man, what an odd moment in time, you know?
It really was. And here's the funny thing about memory, because for the longest time, when I think back to the Bronco chase, with his friend Al Callens driving, and he's huddled, you know, in the back seat somewhere. I had always, because I remember when it happened, I was in this little halfway house, and we only had this really small portable black and white TV. And for all these years, I could have sworn I had been watching The Stand. And The Stand, you know, the miniseries, and they had interrupted The Stand to broadcast this Bronco chase. And it wasn't until, and I was researching this prior to the show, and The Stand was on a month before the Bronco chase, but somehow my mind just melded the two somehow. So I don't know what I was watching, but I do remember being highly upset because what I was watching was being interrupted by the Bronco chase. And I mean, and what a boring fucking chase that was.
I know, right? You know? The slowest high-speed chase in history.
Exactly. And it went on for fucking ever. Yeah, so But I just thought it was odd. And I don't know how those two got, as I said, melded together. But and I thought, well, maybe I was watching because the NBA playoffs were on at the time.
Right. And that was even a big deal at the time because then I'm not a big basketball fan, you know, but some of my friends, you know, called me back when we had like actual phones like hanging on the wall. I'm like, are you seeing this? I'm like, wait, it's like I'm watching the Knicks and they're doing this weird split screen thing with this O.J. Simpson car chase. And I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? You know? And sure enough. Yeah. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. I was into the NBA at that time because that's when the Suns had, you know, my favorite team. It had Barkley and Dan Murley and KJ and AC Green. I mean, they had a really good team, but they weren't even playing that night. It was the Knicks and I think it was the Spurs that they were playing.
That sounds right.
And I didn't care about either team, so I couldn't imagine myself watching that. So as I said, for the life of me, I have no idea what it was that I was watching that got me so upset. But I certainly watched that long-ass boring car chase, and can you imagine what it would be like if that happened today?
Oh my God, dude. Dude, please.
And I really can't help but wonder if the verdict might have been different if there had been social media back then the way we have it now.
Who knows, man? Like, I saw an article recently. I didn't read it. I just saw a headline. So, let's just get that up front. I did not watch any of the videos related. I just haven't had the time. But apparently, like, in an interview, one of the jurors recently, like, came right out and said, yeah, we knew he was guilty, but we acquitted, like, out of revenge. Against white people, you know, it was like a sort of like a, you know, like a get back kind of thing. Folks, before you come after me, I saw it briefly as a headline and I was busy with work and I haven't circled back. But I remember that there being, hold on, I'm looking it up right now. OJ juror from OJ. Speaks out about his death. Let's see, what is this? Spoke about the case and then, okay. Okay, this has got more than I have time for like right now. So anyway. But yeah, man, I remember how controversial it was at the time. I remember the glove. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah.
You know, and just the spectacle of it all. And then, you know, and I actually read Marcia Clark's book after that about how, like, the prosecutor's office completely botched the trial and how, like, you know, she believes that what's his face, that one cop, like, I can't believe they planted evidence to convict a guy who was guilty. You know, like, there was no need to fudge anything. We had him, you know, but then all this shit comes out about planted evidence and racial slurs. Right. Mark Furman. Yep. And all this shit comes out about racial slurs and everything. And I'm like, oh God, you know, again, it seemed like a slam dunk. And even Marcia Clark admits that everyone got caught up in the spectacle. And the TV cameras and the judge, you know, wanted to be Lance Ito, wanted to be a TV, you know, he was enamored with being on TV and everything. But man, it all came flooding back. You know, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember it now, you know, and, you know, and look, two people fucking died, right? Brutally. But what I do find, like, it's just one of those cases where O.J. Simpson was, I don't want to throw around the word hero. It's not like he pulled people out of a burning building or something, but He was a football star, you know, he was a sports hero, let's put it that way, you know, and all of that, like nobody cared. Like it mean, it's almost meaningless now, like all those records he held and everything, and, yep. and his ability on the football field, nobody talk, no one will talk about that, you know, and rightfully so, I get it, you know, but it's sad in that respect, you know, and his kids have to live with this legacy. You know?
Yeah, I read Christopher Darden's book, and he was the assistant prosecutor on mm-hmm. the case. And I found that fairly fascinating, and it sounds like, I didn't read Marcia Clark's book, but it sounds like they just kind of echoed each other.
Yeah.
From what you said, what he said sounded very, very similar in his book as well.
Yeah, they really, really botched it. You know, they should have just stuck to some of the really overwhelming evidence and just stopped. You know, Mark Furman should never have been put on the stand unless the shit that he said, like, or the shit that came out, they got blindsided by that, you know.
You know, and that's always possible.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But yeah, man, an interesting chapter in American history, man, the O.J. Simpson chase and the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah. And, you know, Judge Ida would have been a meme today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so would Johnny Cochran, for that matter.
Johnny Cochran. Yep. I was just about to ask his name. Like, I can't remember the name of the, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of his defense team is dead now.
Yes.
Johnny Cochran's dead. Kardashian, he's dead.
And who was the other guy?
Robert, the famous guy.
Effley Bailey, right?
Effley Bailey,
yep.
He's gone.
He famous.
And the other guy, Robert something or other, I can't remember his last name. I don't know if he's dead or not, but... you know, that's still really kind of weird. You know, three of his biggest defense attorneys, you know, all died. And all died before him.
Yeah, that's true.
Like they were getting his room ready down below.
Right?
You know, stoking those fires.
Yeah. So,
yeah, well, that, you know, 90s was such an interesting time. You know, it, you know, so much was changing at that time. You know, the way we watched movies, you know, because Netflix was coming out around that time. So, you know, people were renting DVDs through the mail, and DVDs were becoming, you know, really, really popular. You know, phones were going through major changes, you know, it's, you know, the 90s was just really kind of a decade that archaeologists from the future are going to look at and say, what were they doing back then? You know,
right?
Even more so than the 80s, because, you know, the 80s was just about money, sex, and drugs. But the 90s was really a huge technological advance. You know, with computers, as I said, and phones, and the way we consume media, and of course, you know, the internet taking off, you know, AOL and all of the other online services going to the wayside, making room for the big boy in the room.
You've got mail.
Yeah. And I, you know, I can still hear that sound of the modem connector.
Right? Oh, God. Fuck. Yeah. People will never know the joy of hearing that screech, you know?
I had that as my ringer, my
really?
Ringtone on my phone, yeah. Until it got too annoying, which was like maybe a week. Now it's the Exorcist theme.
Oh, that's cool. I had that for a while. I rotate between like that and Halloween. I have a Halloween theme sometimes. Yeah. And that creeps people out.
I've got the Bernie Miller theme too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So what's your ringtone now?
It's just one of the generic Verizon ones.
Ah, okay.
I don't have it. I'm lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you know, you've got to, you know, tap 3 or 4 or 5 buttons. You know, who has time for that?
Dude, remember, okay, in the God, I'm old category, remember when you had to actually go and, like, download a ringtone and you had to, like, pay for some of them?
Right,
you
know, like $1.99 or
it was like $1.99 or something like that to download, like, a song as your ringtone or something. Like,
yep.
You had to go to, like, the Verizon store or something.
Yeah, I also had as my message notification, Leslie Jordan. You remember Leslie Jordan?
Yeah.
Him saying his famous phrase from when he was doing the TikToks and Instagrams. Well, shit. What are you all doing? Screwing? But I had to change that for work.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because I don't always remember to turn my ringer off at work. And, I mean, I keep it in a locker, but because we're not allowed to have them on the floor.
Mm.
But, you know, nobody wants to hear Leslie Jordan being magnified in a metal. You know,
that would be kind of funny.
It would be.
you know.
But I wanted to keep the job. I mean, I still do. I decided probably it would be better if I changed that.
I concur.
So. All right.
All right.
Well, we both saw, well, you saw the entire thing. I'm halfway through it. But the new Fallout TV series debuted on Amazon Prime last week, a day early as well.
Yeah.
And my friend Chris from work was telling me about it, that he was watching it. And I asked him how he liked it, and he said it was fucked up. And he said, but I mean that in a good way. And I said, well, that's my favorite thing, fucked up. That's the genre of writing I invented.
Right. Like, it's like, Scott's like, have you read my books? Like,
Oddly enough, I gave him a copy of Errors of the Flesh to read, and he hasn't told me whether he liked it or not. So.
Oh, boy.
You know, silence says everything sometimes.
Indeed.
Yeah. But I told him I was going to start watching it. And then over the weekend, we were messaging back and forth, and he inadvertently told me the ending because he just assumed that I had finished the whole thing. Because saying I'm going to start watching it means the same thing as I finished it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I can see how you can mix those two up.
Yeah. You know, anybody can make that mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, in a series like Fallout, you know, knowing the ending isn't, you know, a real big deal for me. And I kind of figured that's how it was going to end anyway. Because the games had been, you know, hinting at that, you know, especially with Fallout 4. But I really, really dig it. I absolutely have been enjoying everything that I've seen so far.
Yeah, me too, man. And I won't spoil anything either. You know, I did watch the whole thing. You know, real quick on that. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I wish that, I hope for the second season, Amazon goes back to the one a week format. I don't know. I think binge watching has kind of ruined TV in a way. Yes, I did watch all 8 episodes across a 3-day weekend, so I'm guilty, but there's like no anticipation anymore of like, oh, what's going to happen? Like, oh, I can't wait to watch next week. So I kind of wish we would go back to that, you know, but maybe not I'm in the minority.
You very well may be, not me.
Hmm.
I absolutely love binge watching. One of the things that I hated about episodic TV was having to wait, you know, a week to see what happens next.
And yeah, but didn't it build up some anticipation, though? Like,
it was fucking annoying. because they would always end an episode on a cliffhanger just to get you to watch. And I hated that.
Let me ask you that. Okay, I was just going to ask you, but are you really being genuine, Scott? Because back then, that's all we knew. You know?
Yeah, I hated it. I did not like it. I absolutely did not like it back then.
Hmm.
And that hasn't changed. I'm very glad to have binge watching. And, you know, that may be a minority opinion on my part. But I'll tell you, there's a Apple TV had a miniseries called Masters of the Air.
Yeah, I've heard of it. It's on my list to watch.
And that was episodic. I mean, that came out once a week. And I wouldn't watch it until all of the episodes were out.
Hmm.
And I'm doing that with the show they have, Franklin, on Apple TV with Michael Douglas as Ben Franklin.
Yeah, I saw some previews for that. It looks interesting.
It does look interesting. And it's done by the same guy who did Adams, John Adams, the miniseries for HBO. And I absolutely loved that. So I'm looking forward to Franklin. But I'm not going to watch it until all of the episodes are out. I've done that with American Horror Story. Outside of the time when I was reviewing each episode on my blog. Or I think there was one season where we talked about it every week as it came out. That was a long time ago that I think we did that. But other than that, I will wait for an entire run to come out. I mean, it's only like 8, 9, 10 weeks because that's all they ever seem to do is 8, 9, 10 episodes. So, you know.
Yeah,
I will say I do miss the 22 episode season.
Yeah, no, but see, for a show like Law and Order, okay, but I think for something like Fallout or something like that, or The Witcher, I think I like kind of the condensed story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can have a nice story arc and then have another one for the next season. Like as much as I loved Fallout, I don't know, like 22 episodes, like
that might be overkill.
Plus the cost, you know, would probably be prohibitive. Like for a TV cop drama, you can do that, you know?
But yeah, for a show like Fallout, because they spared no expense. That is not a cheap looking show.
Dude, I am the set. The set design is just amazing. Like, I want to watch it through again just to see if I can spot all the Easter eggs and stuff and tie-ins to the games.
Yep.
You know, because there are so many. So real quick, like, I don't, so, okay. Anyway, what I like about it is one of the things I really liked about it is when they first announced it, I said, oh, well, of course the protagonist is going to be a female, you know, because we're not allowed to have strong male heroes in our media anymore. I said, but let's see what happens. And I was very pleasantly surprised because Lucy, the main character, she's not just some superpowered Mary Sue girl boss who's just great at everything, you know. I like her character development and her character arc. I know you haven't finished it yet, but she's not just a badass out of the gate. You know, she's naive. She gets her ass handed to her multiple times in the wasteland, you know, caught off guard, has struggles, you know. It's not like Rey from Star Wars where she's just a she's never saw the Millennium Falcon before, but somehow she knows how to fix it better than Han Solo does. And you're like, what? But so I like Lucy, but by far my favorite character is the ghoul.
Yeah, that's a good character.
Right.
And I said this on I think I said this on another show. I like the makeup that they have for the ghoul because it is very ghoul like. but not so disgusting that you don't want to look at the screen while he's right. on.
Right. And Walton Goggins is just, I just love him as an actor.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I like how he plays both roles equally well, like back when he was the cowboy, then when he was normal, and then as the ghoul. So by far my favorite character. My least, I don't really care for Maximus so much, the guy from the Brotherhood of Steel. I just don't.
No, but he's the most, I think he's the most interesting and complex character in the show. Because you don't really know if he's crazy or not. You know? You know, and as I said, you know, I've only watched halfway through. I watched the first four episodes and I'll finish it off this weekend.
Okay.
But for those first four episodes, he does things that are fairly heroic, and he does things that are like, makes you wonder, what the fuck is wrong with him?
Right.
And I just find that interesting. He's a very flawed character, regardless of what his, you know, chaotic, neutral, chaotic, good, chaotic, evil alignment may be.
Mm.
I just find him very interesting. But, you know, having said that, yeah, he's not my favorite character either. The dog is my favorite character.
Dog meat!
And I was so glad they used it. What I love, going on a sidetrack here, is the attention to detail in this movie and how they really have embodied and captured the spirit of the game.
100%. Yep.
They have nailed that like no other video game adaptation has ever done. I mean, this is the gold standard of video game adaptations, in my opinion. And I only hope the second season is as good as the first. And I mean, I suppose it helps that the writer and director, you know, is a huge Fallout fan.
You're right.
And, but I just love the little nods, you know, seeing the Pip-Boys in that shop in that town that they first get into.
Yep.
You know, there was a mini nuke on the shelf in there. And then there I saw, I forget where it was. It was like in the first or second episode, there was a banner for a movie. And I forget what it was called, but it was a takeoff of A Boy and His Dog, you know, a tribute to Harlan.
Oh,
know,
okay. I didn't notice Harlan that. Also,
because right. Fallout was very much influenced by A Boy and sure. His Dog.
Sure.
And I thought that was cool. You know, and just seeing the stim packs and
right? The right. Radway.
And the Radway. And it was all just so, I mean, there are times I just kind of get chills. And the photography and the cinematography is just top notch. I mean, it really is. You know, it'd be easy to say, oh, they're just trying to, you know, make a buck, but they really put some thought and effort into this, far more than they did their Lord of the Rings series, I think.
Oh, dude, it's not even comparable. It's not even comparable. They spent $500 million on the Rings of Power. And we never even talked about that, but in my opinion, it was a dumpster fire.
I only saw the first episode and I couldn't watch anymore.
Yeah, it is awful. They spent like half of that on Fallout and it is far, far superior.
Yeah.
And so one of the few complaints that I saw, and it was from a guy that I know who's just like a hyper nerd. Like, I'm a nerd. This guy makes me look like a fucking quarterback, you know. But his complaint is that the plot of the show doesn't follow any of the main quest lines from the games. And I'm like, I'm glad that it didn't, because this way they're not constraining themselves by what happens in the games.
Well, exactly.
I like the fact that they pull a little bit going all the way back to Fallout 1. There's little bits of all of them. So they tie in to all the games without being constrained by it, you know? And I thought that was a great choice because now they can do anything. Like they can take it in any direction, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand what some of these ultra gamer, ultra nerds want. We've played the quest. Why do we want to see it reenacted?
Right? I mean, it's the same people that complain like when a graphic novel or a comic gets adapted. Like it's this same guy bitched about every episode of The Walking Dead and how it was different than the comics, and bitched about every episode of Preacher and how it was different from the comics. I'm like, dude, why can't you just love them both?
Right? They're two like, different mediums. Right. You can't. You know,
right.
People don't get that. And we talked about this on the show where we talked about our favorite adaptations.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, adaptations is a very different medium. You know, and there's a reason why books and movies are different, because you can't translate, you know, page for page a novel to a movie. You know, I mean, at this point, you know, length doesn't have anything to do with it, because you can just do what they do on Netflix and make a 200-page book like The Haunting on Hill House, an 8-hour miniseries. You know, and I'm not knocking that, because you know how much I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not even, you know, the length of time it would take to adapt a book to a movie, depending on how big the book is. It's they're different, you know. One's visual, you know. One's, you know, not, other than what you imagine in your mind. So you know, you've got to do things different. And I'm glad they're doing a little bit of a different story, but I could actually see this as being a game in the series. I mean, the way they started off that first episode, I did not expect that.
Right.
You know,
yeah, they just jump right in. You know what I mean? Like they just jump right in. And dude, like the only thing, like, and the difference, and I think what some of the complainers lose is, but even though I can sort of understand it a little bit, the reason video games are so hard to adapt is because when you play the games, you're used to the freedom of choice, right? Like, oh, yeah. I'm going to make the character go this way. I'm going to make the character do this. Whereas on the TV show, now you're just following along, you know, and you don't have that level of control. And I think for some people, there's some like cognitive dissonance there.
Oh,
they can't handle that. You know, it's like, dude, fucking get over it. If anything, the show has made me want to replay the games.
Dude, I started replaying Fallout 3 this weekend. Just
no shit. I think I'm going to do the same.
You know, and it's, in fact, Chris and I both started playing it this past weekend because he wanted to play where he nuked Megaton.
Okay.
You know, the city. And I'd already done that once. And so I'm just doing a normal playthrough. But boy, I forgot how fun Fallout 3 was. I really do like Fallout 3, and I love Fallout 4. My only gripe with Fallout 3 is the color scheme. I mean, it's just really kind of browns and shades of brown, and it gets a little bit boring to look at.
Almost like a nuclear wasteland.
Yeah, there's no vibrant colors like Fallout 3, which is kind of what I prefer. But, I mean, I get why they did it. It's just, after a while, it gets, you know, a little samey.
Yeah, I get it.
But, you know, that was also 15 years ago that came out, 20 years ago, almost.
When did Fallout 3 come out? Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, at the time... Well, 2008. At the time, I bought an Xbox 360 just to play Fallout 3, and then after that, I bought an Xbox One just to play Fallout 4. You know, yeah, I definitely. Maybe I'll start with New Vegas, because I remember at the time I really didn't care for it. And then people are like, oh, but you need to give it a second chance. You know, it's actually better than you remember. So maybe I'll do that. I'll just, maybe I'll start with New Vegas.
Yeah, I may replay that again. But I think we talked about this. I think New Vegas, you know, of the Fallout games is overrated. Because people just absolutely love that game. You know, in spite of all the huge bugs, you know, more so than what you expect from a Fallout game when it first came out. I mean, I like it, and it's fun, and I like it being set in Vegas, and I like, you know, the different factions and some of the different things they did with it. But ultimately, I enjoyed Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 much more.
Yeah, oh, so did I. That's the problem. I found, like, some of the quests in New Vegas to be very repetitive,
yeah,
you know, and very boring, you know. But then again, that's been a long time. And that is one of the few open world games like that that I never bothered to finish the main quest line because I just didn't care.
Yeah, I can't remember if I finished it or not, to be honest.
Yeah, at least with like the other Fallouts and Skyrim and Red Dead Redemption, I'm like, I need to know what happens. Like, I need to know what happens at the end of this. And then I just remember with New Vegas, I just stopped caring, you know? But I know there's a bunch of downloadable content now. There's been a bunch of patches and upgrades and stuff. So maybe it's time to give it another shot.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, it's on Game Pass on Xbox, so you know I can download all that stuff.
And yeah, well, I've got it on PC, so I mean I can take a look and see what mods are available for it. I'm sure there's some pretty kick-ass mods.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
That's the only negative about playing the Bethesda games on a console. Is you don't have access to all of the user mods. PlayStation has some, but certainly not all that's available.
Yeah, that is true. There's a surprising amount available on Xbox. Like there's
Xbox. Yeah.
There's a ton of mods for Skyrim on Xbox.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure not nearly as much as on the PC, just because a lot of times the developer, you know, the mod developer doesn't bother to port them over from the PC, but there's still enough to keep me interested, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
But all right. I'll have to, my big fear though, is that if I start playing Fallout again, it's just going to engulf my life and I really won't do anything except work and then run over to the Xbox, you know, and start playing, but whatever.
Yeah. That's a problem I have because when I get home about, you know, a little bit after 9, like maybe 9:10 or so, if the bus is on time. And by the time I get home and, you know, I take off my shoes and whatnot and I relax, it's time to eat dinner because, you know, I'm starving. And then I get sleepy and then I end up going to bed. As much as I want to play it when I get home or watch another episode of Fallout, I don't have the energy to do it. And if I did start playing Fallout, I wouldn't stop until it was too late.
Right. And that's what happens to me. Next thing I know, it's 3 a.m. and my eyes are completely dried out.
Yeah.
You know?
So I know better enough. No, know better than to start doing that.
Just before I forget, I know I posted about this on social media, but it's probably a ton of listeners that don't follow me. I did go to see The First Omen.
Oh, yes. I saw your Facebook post about that.
Yeah, man. And you know me.
You loved that, didn't you?
Yeah, totally. And if by love you mean hate, yeah. Look, man, I don't often post. I'm kind of a believer. I talk about things that I like, not so much things that I don't like.
Yeah.
But I felt that I owed it to my listeners and my viewers and my friends to spare them the pain. You know, it really is the prequel that no one needs. Like, I never watched The Omen and thought, you know, I really wonder what Damien's origin story is, you know?
He's right.
And even if they decided to do that and I resigned myself to it, it was so ham-fisted and so poorly written, you know, and just clunky and just not scary. And if you have a movie that's like ripping off its own IP, like, spoiler alert, I went to see it with Mark Boutros and another friend, and there's one particular scene in the movie. I said, watch, there come, the line is coming. That character is going to say, it's all for you, before they do something horrible. And sure enough, it's all for you, you know?
Like, and I'm like,
I'm like, are you actually fucking kidding me right now? And there's just so many just blatant things like that, you know? And like the cinematography was good. There's one or two like pretty effective jump scares. But other than that, it's more a lot of just people like, I don't even know how to put it. And then there's one really awful scene where there's like this one mysterious priest that is the one who knows what's really happening. And the lead, the protagonist goes to see him. And I call him Father Exposition, because then he just does, he just does this big exposition dump.
Yeah.
To just explain the whole movie. And I'm like, well, that would have saved me a lot of time, you know? But right. Yeah, man, folks. And then, of course, you know how we all have that one Facebook friend who only shows up to disagree with you?
Yeah, of course.
It never fails. Like, they're, boom, right on my social media. Never hear from this person, ever. I advertise our podcast, never. I share a trailer to one of my movies. No like, no comment. I post about how I hated a movie. She's got to jump in and say, I think you're wrong. I rather enjoyed it. I'm like, okay, who the fuck asked you? You know, but it's just funny, like how there, we all have at least one of those that only show up to disagree with you, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, maybe we can, well, I can talk about, I've got a new release coming out Monday. The day that you hear this podcast is the day that The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow will finally be out.
Nice.
It's going to be the ebook version on Monday. And then sometime after the 26th, I think, the paperback will come out. I have to have somebody do the cover for the paperback, because I can't get Amazon to approve it because of the sizes and what. It's a pain in the ass trying to get a paperback done on Amazon. And it seems they've made it more difficult since I released Errors of the Flesh. So that'll be coming out, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after that. I have to wait until next payday to pay to get that done. And then I'm hoping, if I'm able to get a hardcover version of it out this summer. And also hoping that I can get my other books in hardcover as well.
Dude, that would be cool. I actually would buy those just to have them as, you know, on my bookshelf. I'm not even kidding. I still love hardcover books.
I do too. And now that Amazon, you know, KDP, you know, has the ability to do hardcovers, I'm gonna do it.
Nice.
It's just a matter of, you know, not being lazy and getting it done, because I've had this ability for a while now, and I've kept thinking, oh, yeah, I want to do this in hardcover, get these in hardcover, et cetera, et cetera. But I haven't done it, and I'm just going to do it with the novels. I'm not going to do it with my essay collections, because they're too small to really make it worthwhile.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because the price that I would have to charge for, you know, say the Terry Gilliam one, wouldn't make it worth it. and nobody would buy the hardcover at the price I would have to charge. And that's, you know, keeping my share at a bare minimum, you know, barely making a profit on it. And it's just not worth it.
Right.
Well, so right, that is coming out Monday, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm looking forward to listening to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I've got to upload that to Audible next week. And I did get a special cover for it made for Audible, because they have different requirements, of course.
Ah, okay.
But I was smart enough to get that done when I had the ebook cover done. And may I say, and I've said this before, the woman who did the cover for Tree of Everlasting Sorrow really did a fantastic job. She's this woman in Pakistan. That's all she does to make a living, is these, you know, ebook covers and whatnot. And she's very, very nice, very good communication skills, much better than I have, apparently, because I couldn't think of the word communication. And very easy to work with. So I'm going to have her do the paperback cover, and then I'll have her do the hardcover as well, because she did the original, so she deserves to do the others as well and get the money for that.
Yeah, why not, man?
Yeah, and I got that on Fiverr, and I will tell you something, because I see a lot of times in subgroups on Reddit, you know, for writing and whatnot, people always talking about how expensive book covers are, and you know yourself, when you wanted to get a poster done, and you were talking to Keelan, how expensive they can be.
Yeah.
You know, and Keelan, you know, is on the lower end of the scale for what a book cover or a flyer or something like that can go for. Because they've gone up. I've seen them go up to like $600, $700, $800.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so the cover, and you've seen the cover for the new book.
Yep.
And that was $25.
Yeah, look, man, some people like criticize that, but listen, I can only afford what I can afford, right? And I would love to, you know, give business to someone, but then like for my last Grindhouse event, I used Fiverr, and some dude in Sri Lanka designed it, you know? And we were emailing back and forth. He was a very nice guy. And he said, yeah, well, the economy, you know, he's like, the way the economy is here, I can afford to do these posters at these prices, you know?
Yeah.
And at the time, I just couldn't afford $400, $500, $600 for a poster, you know? And I feel bad about that. I would love to employ someone here in the U.S. and I understand the cost of living here is higher, so they need to make more money on each commission. I understand that, but I have economic realities as well, you know? So yeah. It's kind of a cycle, you know?
Well, what I like, and one of the reasons that she and this other one that I had do the cover for Errors of the Flesh, they get a subscription to Shudder or one of those huge file websites that have all sorts of stuff on it. And for an extra, like for her, and I say her because I can't remember her name for the life of me, for an extra $5 or $10, whatever it was, I can get an image to use. And so that image was from, you know, the collection that she has an account with. And so even, and I've seen they're like $150 a year. So even $10, $15 just for the image, plus, you know, the 15 or so that was for the cover, you know, you can't beat that. And all she really has to do is put the name on it and, you know, size it to, you know, Amazon specifications. And I know that doesn't take long because I did it myself with Life in Amber. So, you know, she does, and this isn't putting her down. Let's make this clear.
Right.
There's not a lot of time that goes into it. mostly because she could probably do this in her sleep, you know.
Right.
So, you know, she can afford to price it lower and make up for that in bulk because, you know, I'm sure she's got a process that she goes through and she can do it, you know, bim, bam, bam. I mean, I got it within 2 or 3 days, you know, and it was supposed to have been like 5 days or 7 days at the most. And I got it early. And there was nothing that I was going to change on it. So, you know, it worked out for the for both of us. And, you know, and you can give them tips, too.
Right.
You know, so.
I did see that. I did tip the guy that that made my poster.
Yeah, so Fiverr is really a good deal for book covers. I don't know about anything else because that's the only thing I've ever really used it for is the covers.
There's there's another place called Upwork, I think, where you can find professionals, but it's more for like programmers, you know, developers and stuff like that. Okay. There's some creative stuff on there, but not like Fiverr, you know, where you can find tons, you know.
The Imaginarium logo that we have, that was done by Fiverr.
Ah, okay. And I learned that today. Folks.
Yeah, because that was, you know, 10 years ago. I forgot about that. But yeah, and that was actually literally only $5.
You know? Right.
And that's why when you were asking for a copy of it, I only had a low quality because that was the only one I had that he gave me. So, yeah, there's, you know, people can, you know, and I suppose there's some valid arguments to be made about not using Fiverr and, you know, people getting exploited. But if they were feeling they were getting exploited, they would charge more, I'm sure.
No, I don't know. Yeah, the guy that I dealt with didn't, like, look, obviously it's over email, so you don't know, but he did not seem like he seemed genuinely happy, like with the price and everything, you know, and the turn, you know. So I didn't get the feeling that these are some abused people in a sweatshop somewhere getting beaten, you know,
not at all.
Design, you know.
Yeah, you know, not like the gold sellers for World of Warcraft back in the early days. You had a bunch of Chinese people in a room trying to sell gold online, you know, in World of Warcraft, which was a big thing back then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, everybody's happy, you know, and I don't look at really what country that they're from. If they were from the U.S., you know, I'd pay the same in the U.S., you know, for somebody from the U.S. It just happened to be that some of the other covers that she had done, I really liked. And that's really all you can go by is, you know, their samples. And if you like their samples, then, you know, you're going to take a chance.
Agreed. Well, Scott, as much as I could listen to your dulcet tones all day, we are at the end. We are actually a little over our time.
Yeah, I forgot we started a little bit early.
Yeah,
that's fine. I've got a home visit from my mental health provider at 10, so that's fine.
All right. So, real quick, anything else going on besides the book release coming up?
Nope. You can get my other books at Amazon. You can get the ebook versions wherever ebooks are sold, and of course, the audiobook versions at audible.com.
Cool. For my part, you can check out The Theater of Terror and Return to the Theater of Terror now on Tubi and Amazon Prime and a ton of other streaming services. So it's out there. And please, if you do watch either one of them, I know it only takes, you know, it takes time, but please go to IMDb or wherever you're watching it, whether it's Tubi. Give it a thumbs up or whatever their rating system is. It only takes a second, and it really helps independent people get visibility because there's a ton of indie work out there. And the only way to boost it is from viewers to just give it a like or a thumbs up or a rating or what have you. You know, if you have time to go on and bash some fucking band that you hate, you have time to go give my movie a thumbs up. Please, please, please.
Exactly. And it's Grindhouse Nights.
Yep, Grindhouse Nights Film Festival. Find us on Film Freeway. You got some time to submit. We're, you know, open for another couple months at our normal, you know, submission fee, which I think is very reasonable. I don't know what it is, but I know that it's reasonable. So
yeah, you're only the creator of it. Yeah. Why would you know that?
Exactly. But it's like $20 or something like that. So it's really pretty reasonable. So submit your films now. Drop what you're doing and submit your film if you made one.
Yes. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.